one kicking things out of orbit.
Oh my gosh!
I'm not even gonna show
one of the greatest fighters.
John Jones beat every champion pretty much
now. Khabib gets his hands on McGregor, it's gonna be that night.
Let's get into it. And if you were waiting for this one, you were waiting a long time. It is time for the return of This Week in MMA. As always, one half of your hosts, Craig Allen. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. And I suggest you do at Craig Allen FNP with me to my left. To your right, as always, Matt Allen FNP. And this week in MMA, it's kind of like the love and hip hop of Fight Night Picks. If you've ever been a fan, you know that this show could go off the rails, but we're going to have a lot of fun. And this is where Fight Night Picks was built. This was the original podcast where I talked into, that microphone, figuratively this microphone, and talked about fights that nobody cared about for hours on end, and talking about prospects that nobody had ever heard of, like Pyotr Jan and Magomed Magomedov.
Right, Craig.
Little bit of a precursor to this week, but Matt, I'm really excited to bring the show back. We got a lot of great fights to talk about. Of course, PFL, the playoffs start this week. You also have Bellator 264. There's a lot of great cards out there this week in the absence of the UFC, but Matt, if we throw it on back to the UFC, UFC 265, what a card.
I think we both did pretty well, too, prediction-wise. Now, the pay-per-view portion was amazing. Unfortunately, we did run into a few technical difficulties during our own broadcast, but still, I feel like the whole card was a complete success. Ton of fun fights, top to bottom. Now there's a legit super fight that can be made at the heavyweight division. I know we're both excited at the prospect of Ciryl Gane versus Francis Ngannou. Just a great card, top to bottom.
Absolutely can't wait for that one. And when you look over the entire card, so many big opportunities, so many big performances that were put on.
Yeah.
Who was the fighter that surprised you the most on that card?
Now, I'm going to take this time to pat myself on the back a little bit. I don't think I do this all that often, but I've been talking about Vicente Luque for a hot minute now, and it's been a while. It's been a slow burn. He's lost to a few top guys. He's lost to Leon Edwards. He lost to Wonderboy, but the performance he put on against Michael Chiesa, I was really impressed by it, because if Luque ever had a weakness, it was the wrestling. If you go back and look at the Leon Edwards fight, Leon Edwards was the one taking down Luque. He took him down 4 or 5 times in that fight. Luque not only looked great offensively with his submission, but the fact that he was able to fight off the rear naked choke attempt from Michael Chiesa, who we know is absolutely tricky on the mat. I just thought it was a really grown-up performance from Luque, and it finally made me look at him and think, wow, this guy maybe, a few things have to go right, but this guy might be able to fight for the title one day.
It was definitely a great night of fights. If we throw it on over to the YouTube community tab, everybody that's out there, if you're not checking out, you definitely should, because we have a lot of picks and plays for you out there, so check them out for this week, of course, with Bellator and the PFL. I threw it out there. Who impressed you most? 42% of the fans, 2,300 total votes, Ciryl Gane. We also had another 42% with Vicente Luque, 5% with Kopp, 6% with Penne. But if we go down through the comments section, 53 of you decided to put yourselves out there. Bob all over that Luque win. And Clown Baby with Aldo can still make a good run to the title. He looked massive, fast, and technical as ever. To me, I thought he looked absolutely amazing. And the one other fighter that I wanted to shout out, and this has been a weird narrative that I haven't been on the side of this week, but we should definitely mention it, Bobby Green. I mean, the 30-27 for Fiziev against Green was insane. We had Fiziev in the first two rounds, but for Bobby Green to show up and turn it on in that third round, he definitely deserves praise. He's a guy that's fought the highest level of competition for the longest time. Sometimes he falls short against those big names, and against some of the lesser known guys or the guys below 15, even below 20, he absolutely excels against. But Bobby Green, hell of a performance.
Yeah, no, and I think that's really good to point out too, because yes, it was a loss, but it's one of those losses where I don't think he loses much stock. And even, let's look at the first fight on the main card, Casey Kenney versus Song Yadong. I was listening to the Teddy Atlas podcast earlier today, and I completely agree with what he said. He said that that's one of those losses where, like, Casey Kenney shouldn't fall that far back in the rankings. It was a great fight. A lot happened on both sides. I thought the rightful guy won, don't get me wrong, but it's not like I looked at Casey Kenney after that fight and thought, oh wow, he can't be in the top 15 anymore. I honestly look at that fight and I go, wow, he was still competitive with Song Yadong. He was competitive on the feet, which is something I never really thought he would be, and I don't think he loses much stock on that either. But just to go back to the Jose Aldo point, the great thing about Jose Aldo now down at 135 pounds is that up at 145, he was just there for so long. We saw him fight everybody. There were no new fresh matchups. 135 is probably the best division in the sport right now, and now Jose Aldo inserted himself as a top contender in an already stacked division. So his next opponent could be TJ Dillashaw, Corey Sandhagen, maybe a Pyotr Jan rematch down the road. Like, there's nothing but fun fights out there for Jose Aldo in the future, and I think that's something that every MMA fan can get excited for.
Jose Aldo lighting it up at 135 pounds. I threw it out out there on Twitter on Fight Night. Wanted to see what people were thinking in terms of the greatest featherweight of all time. And a large percentage of people going with Max Holloway. A couple of comments out there. Conor McGregor. To me, Jose Aldo is your greatest featherweight of all time. Just based on the WEC run and the fights he was able to have at 145 pounds with the UFC. He went on an absolute heater. And I mean, you look at it. He loses to Conor McGregor, shapes the rest of his career. It's kind of funny when you watch him walk up at 135 pounds, they announce him as the two-time UFC featherweight champ. It's almost funny, and you forget he won the belt back again, only to lose it not long after. So it has been a weird run for Jose Aldo. He's been able to hit his stride at 135 pounds. All of those fights at 135 last weekend were definitely able to hit. And coming up this week, we've got Bellator 264. We've got the PFL and the playoffs. So what we're going to do, we're going to throw it on over to the main card fights on both of those cards. We're not going to go as in-depth as we normally do with the UFC picks and predictions, but we got some neat insight. We're going to take a shot at the dark. We're going to throw out some ideas, and I want to hear from everybody out there. Who do you have down below in the comments section? PFL playoffs, Bellator. We'll timestamp it. You can check it out. Matt, as we always say with Fight Night Picks, let's get into it. OG PFL fans, stand up. Where are you? We got some PFL previews coming up this week. You've got a big time card with the lightweights and the welterweights. It's headlined by Ray Cooper III taking on Rory McDonald. Kind of a weird one because the number one fighter in the season isn't going to be competing. He's out due to injury. We'll talk about that one later. But at lightweight, this is a really interesting one because you have pretty well a three-way tie for the top three spots. You have Rajabov, you have Collard, Manfiao, and then Martinez. And it's weird because the top three, all 6 points going into the playoffs, Martinez only has three, and he gets an opportunity to rematch here in a fight that ended very controversially by split decision. It was a win for Martinez when he was taking on the 2019 PFL lightweight runner-up, Loic Rajabov. And I remember during Rajabov's run in that season, they had diplomats from Tajikistan over. Wild. It was so crazy. How awesome is it, though, to see a fighter like that represent a part of the world where we don't really see a lot of MMA stars coming from?
It's really cool that MMA feels like it's one of those few sports that does actually get represented on a global scale. Like, the NBA and the NFL love to talk about, oh, we promote our sport globally. They do actually look at their league, and it's like, oh, most of their athletes are North American. They might have, like, five guys from outside. But MMA truly is international, and that's the great thing about it. And the cool thing about the PFL, too, is most of their fighters, or at least a large portion of them, do tend to come from the Russian area, so you honestly get to see a lot of talent that you normally don't get to see in the Bellators or the UFCs.
I can't wait for this one. And the interesting thing, again, it was a close fight. I went back, watched an interview with friend of the show, Drake Riggs, my MMA news. He did it in person over at Sanford MMA with Mr. Rajabov. And his questions were, where'd you get the nickname? Nickname, of course, Jaguar Paw. Because of the snow leopards, they're a mythical animal. They're mysterious and powerful. He got it after his second fight. Didn't know he was going to be introduced that way. It was a fight in Kazakhstan. Neat stuff.
It's like Peter Parker when he fought Sledgehammer. Yeah, Bonesaw. And they were like, wait, you're the human spider? And he's like, no, Spider-Man. They just gave him the nickname. That's a great story.
Throwback to Macho Man Randy Savage. But the other question that he had for him was the fact that he strongly disagreed against the decision, as did a lot of people out there on social media. Of course, all it takes is two different judges. But for Cardo Urso to score at 30-27, a little bit of a head-scratcher. Second round, Rajabov. Third round, probably Rajabov. So a bit of a surprise, the fact that Martinez was able to get the win. And for Canadian MMA fans, you might know Alex Martinez quite well. He's actually represents Paraguay, but also Canada, fighting out of Grand Prairie, Alberta. And listen, before he got the short notice call up to take on Loic Rajabov, because originally it was supposed to be Johnny Case, yikes, but he gets a short notice call up, and I read an interview that he had with Everything GP, Everything Grand Prairie. And in the article, he said he was going in an RV trip across Western Canada with his wife, and then all of a sudden got the phone call. And apparently, he was on a short list to get the call, maybe to the UFC or Dana White's Contender Series, so he had to kind of stay fit and ready to get ready for it. I wanted to shout out his gyms, Champions Gym, as well as Gladiators Martial Arts, both of those in Grand Prairie. But the interesting thing that I found about him is the fact that he's trained full-time for this one out of Vegas. He's been at Syndicate with John Wood. And then you think about some of the bigger fighters that he could train with. Obviously, Sean Strickland, you had in a UFC main event not that long ago. I see Daniel Rodriguez over there at the gym lately. The list goes on and on. Vince Morales, who fought recently. Michael Chiesa. Chris Curtis, that was a part of the PFL.
A lot of great guys.
And just won a fight as well. So, a lot of great guys to train with. But Alex Martinez, his road into MMA, he was a big-time IMMAF guy. 15-4, the total record there. Silver medalist two different times, unfortunately. Just couldn't beat the same guy year over year. You come into a fight like this, Loic Radjabov, mainly known for his knockout abilities. I just want to bounce one more stat off you before we really get into it. It's a fact that he's got 11 of 14 wins by finish, 7 of them by knockout. But then this year, he's gone 7-7 takedown attempts, slowing the fight down a little bit. He's actually had the slowest max strike speed out of any lightweight out there in the PFL at 9.85 miles per hour. The number one quickest guy, grappler Martian Held at 24.27. I found all that weird because we've seen a little bit more of a progression out of Loic Radjabov at 30 years old, training out of Sanford. And we've seen Alex Martinez also take that jump. So this is an interesting fight to me. I can't wait to see what you're thinking.
I actually like the cardio of Radjabov, and it is kind of surprising because you brought it up. A lot of his wins are by finish, but if you even go back and watch their first fight, he is starting to come back as it goes on. And the weird thing about Martinez is that he's not in, and I know I bring this guy up probably way too much, I don't look at him like a Marvin Vettori of his way to strike into the clinch. With Radjabov, he can at least do it a little bit better. That part of his game is more developed, and I honestly see that being a huge factor in this fight. With Radjabov, you bring up a lot of the training partners that Martinez has. Radjabov trains at Sanford MMA. It is known for nothing but top-tier training partners, and I do like him in this rematch. Although, their first fight was extremely close, no matter who, like, you scored it for. There was some controversy, but it was one of those fights where, if you're outraged either way, then it's kind of ridiculous because it was such a close fight the first time around.
Very close fight for Alex Martinez. He lost his last time out by split decision to the former two-time champ Natan Schulte, who beat Loic Radjabov in the finals in 2019. I can't wait for it. This is one where I've had a little bit of a hard time. The odds, Loic Radjabov minus 190 it open. He's a minus 161 favorite now. The odds have shaved off a little bit in favor of Martinez. Open a plus 160 is plus 133. Topology votes. Surprise to us, they are to you. And 364 total votes, 71% Radjabov, 81% by decision for the 29% that have Martinez, 79% by decision. Usually rematches favor the guy that won the fight the first time, and these guys fought not that long ago, but it was so controversial, that's what makes it weird.
Yeah, for sure. Again, I still think Radjabov's going to be the one who's making the more, who's going to be making the most of the improvements in this one, and I do like the progression of his game since the original.
I like Loic Radjabov as well. I think he's got a great opportunity to fight either Manfield or Collard, so you're going to want to stick around for that video. Both of us going with Tajikistan's own Loic Radjabov, your number one seed in the PFL playoffs to get the win. I can't wait for this fight. Let us know down below in the comments section who you have in this one. And what you make of all the PFL content. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. Number 2 and 3 seeded lightweights going at it this week on Friday at PFL playoffs. We have Cassius Clay Collard, Triple C as he's known, taking on Haush Manfiel. And Matt, I can't wait for this fight because for Clay Collard, his brother just had an MMA fight on my birthday, and he won that fight. So congrats to the Collard household. But for Clay Collard, he made us look like absolute donkeys when we picked against him. And we both had Anthony Pettis to get the win in that fight. And Clay Collard looked pretty good. And then it ended up he had a split decision win in his next time out against Joelinton Lutterbach. Crazy thing is, both of these guys fought the same guys and they both beat them, so now they fight here. It's weird because in this fight, you have that set of circumstances. Your other lightweight fight is a rematch that you had earlier on in the season. And somewhere at home, Alex Gilpin is laughing because he doesn't have to fight Lance Palmer for like a fourth or fifth time. But Matt, when we look at this fight for Clay Collard, he had a chance to sit down with our own JHK MMA to talk about the fight coming up and the style that Haush Manfiel possesses. So let's flip it on over to JHK and hear a little bit from Clay Collard.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody about this matchup and they were describing this as like Friday the 13th versus Halloween. You know what I mean? Like you guys both go forward. A lot of violence is going to happen. Someone might get cut. There's going to be blood. You know, what do you think of that prospect of a fight like that?
Man, that's where that's the whole reason I do this. I'm a brawler, man. If you want to stand in front of me and fight toe to toe, man, there's not many people that do. They start to, and then they realize nope, and then they start backing up and running. So if he wants to come out and start slugging, man, and make it that kind of a fight, that's where that's where I live, breathe, and die, you know. So, if he wants to bring that, I'm ready, man. Let's throw blows. You know, I've been training hard. I got a couple new tricks in the bag for him. You know, the people I haven't seen. I wish we could throw elbows. It's too bad. I think I would have done a lot more damage on Ludabach when I was on bottom if I could throw elbows. But I don't know. We'll work with what we got, you know. And I'm just gonna look for that shot, try to hurt him, and go to work and put him away. You know, that would be ideal. Just get him out of there. You know, move on, focus on that next fight. But right now he's in front of me, so.
So overall, if you look at this fight in general, Clay Collard, he has that UFC experience. He fought Max Holloway. He's then fought Anthony Pettis. A little bit of commonality there. He had a wild 2020 in terms of boxing, kind of parlayed in 2021, hit the skids a little bit at the end, which I think has made it a little bit easier to transition more full-time into MMA for Collard. The thing you have to watch out for him, it's his pressure and his boxing, and you see that a lot in his fights. Same thing with Haush Manfio. And Matt, the last thing I have here, he's fought a really good level of competition, maybe not always beat them. Maybe he's on the Ultimate Fighter Season 4 Brazil, lost to Glycel França. So pretty good fighter there, but also his other losses, big guys. You got Matt Frivola, Sydney Outlaw, 7 of his wins by finish. You like to see that one. And he's a guy that had a long time between fights. His last loss to Outlaw, almost 3 years, where he was willing, he said this to Guillerme Cruz of MMA Fighting, to fight for free in those 3 years. Sound like Jeff Munson.
Wow.
What do you make of this one?
I don't know if you ever want to sound like Jeff Munson, but this is the thing. You can't bring up the level of competition of Roush without bringing it up for Clay Collard. Like, Clay Collard has obviously fought the better guys. The weird thing is, Clay Collard might be the most weathered and seasoned 28-year-old vet ever. Like, he's been in there for a long time. He's fought a lot of good guys across sports, too. And that's the weird thing with Clay Collard. He not only has a lot of high-level MMA experience, but he does have that boxing experience, too. And I know the boxing doesn't always translate to MMA, but it's just in competition. And that really does matter. Just being active in somewhat of an athletic area really does matter, and the fact that he was getting rounds constantly and he was getting different looks does matter. The thing about Clay Collard, though, is his pressure does get him in trouble in MMA all the time. Like, his pressure was doing great against Anthony Pettis, but it also made him walk into like 4 flying knees against Anthony Pettis too. That's the thing with Clay Collard. The pressure is a bit of a double-edged sword, and with Clay Collard, it always feels like, okay, is he either going to get tired swinging 1,000 punches at his opponent, or is his opponent going to be able to land one really big shot on him? And yes, he has been able to weather some of those big shots, but even go back to the Pettis fight. He almost got knocked out after dropping Anthony Pettis twice in that fight, and he took a heck of a beating. Like, if Clay Collard's chin was half a point worse than it is, then he's probably out cold from some of those strikes. With Roush, it will be interesting because he does play a very similar game to Clay Collard. The only difference will be, I think he might go to the wrestling a little bit more. The interesting thing with Clay Collard, though, is his game reminds me a lot of Ally Quinta. I don't think Clay Collard can outstrike other pure strikers just strike for strike a lot of the time. I understand a lot of people might think he can just do the boxing, but Clay Collard's just a great fighter who, if you go for takedowns, he's got great takedown defense. He's going to make you tired going for the takedowns. And he's a good enough striker, but kind of a basic striker to where if you don't throw a lot of kicks, and if you are sort of a basic striker, he can outstrike you. Look at Kevin Lee versus Ally Quinta, for instance. Kevin Lee is a much better fighter than Ally Quinta is, I would say. He's got a lot more tools in the tool shed. He's got a better wrestling background. Like, there's just, Kevin Lee has a lot more positives in his game, let's say. But Ally Quinta's game is, I'm going to defend your takedowns, which is what Kevin Lee goes for, and I'm going to expose your okay but not great striking. I feel like this fight's going to follow a very similar rhythm to the second fight between Kevin Lee and Ally Quinta, and that's honestly why I'm picking Clay Collard to win this one by decision.
Clay Collard talked about it in the interview when he took on Luderbach, the fact that he knew the takedowns might be coming. Luderbach's a huge guy, competed at 170, and wouldn't be surprised if he moves back up there, but he came in heavy for that fight, took him down, was able to hold him down a little bit. Collard was able to do some work. Again, if you look at it for Haush Manfio, split decision against Luderbach, split decision against Pettis. Both these guys with splits against the same opponents. But again, when you look at this one, you have American Top Team Zone Manfiao, who gets to train with Gleison Thibault, who's also on this card, as well as Barboza, Mateusz Gamrot.
The career resurgence of Gleison Thibault.
And if we want to talk about a great coach, credit where credit's due, Marcos Damada. This is a guy that you see week in and week out really making in-game adjustments during the fight with lot of his different fighters. If we have a look over at best fight odds for the odds on this one, Matt, Clay Collard is the favorite. Open to minus 120. He's a minus 163 right now. Haush Manfiao, open to plus 100. He's a plus 133. If we go over to Topology, total votes, not a lot. 386 of them, 86% going Collard, 79% having to win by decision. 14% on Manfiao, with 77% having him to win by decision. I think if you like this to go to decision, probably fairly likely. Clay Collard, pretty tough guy to put out of there. His last loss by finish was to Derek Minner. Over 2.5 years ago for Manfiao, same thing. 3 years ago against Cindy Outlaw, he lost by decision, but that was his last loss. So you're confident with Triple C here.
I picked against him once before, and listen, I'm not going to claim to be some like Bellator aficionado, but from
what I've seen
out of Clay Collard, I do really like. And again, I thought he was just kind of a boxer going into the PFL. They're trying to capitalize on his name as much as possible because of the boxing crossover, but no, he's completely proved me wrong, and he has looked pretty good over there. So I'm going to ever so slightly side with Cassius Clay Collard.
I've got American Top Team's Haush Manfiao here. I think he's going to be able to mix it up enough, and that's what I like. Offensive takedowns. Maybe mixes in a submission or two. Again, with the striking, Collard's going to have a definite advantage there. And I really do like his cardio in this one, too. I might disagree a little bit here and there. I think Haush Manfiao has a really good opportunity in this fight, especially he can put it on late as well. That's what makes it fun. These two guys meet in the middle. You get a Song Yadong, Casey Kenny type fight. Can't wait for it. Split on the pick. I've got Brazil's Manfiao. You've got America's Clay Collard. Matt, can't wait for this fight and the rest of the PFL playoffs. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. Some fights are just plain weird. Coming up this week, we have one of those fights. It is the ultimate clash of styles as Magomed Kerimov looks to cash in that money in the bank, taking on Sadibou Sy. Matt, this is one of those fights where, for Sadibou Sy, he's a guy that, coming out of Sweden, training with some of the best in the world, Oliver Enkamp among them, Bellator's finest.
The best in the world, Oliver Enkamp.
Who else? Carl Albrechtsen. I've seen him in some of the picks. Maybe Sadibou could have made a good move over to Bellator, but he didn't choose to. This is a guy with over 70 pro fights in Muay Thai and kickboxing. He was also on the Swedish Muay Thai and kickboxing national teams. He is one of the biggest guys at 170 pounds you're going to find in terms of reach, in terms of height, in terms of length. And in terms of striking, he is definitely a very good striker. And he's been around since, well, forever with the PFL. You look at his finish over David Machado, a guy that made it a long way with Bellator, UFC, PFL. And in that fight, hits him once, wobbles him. That's pretty much it. Since that fight, though, he has a loss on his record to Glycao France. He has a majority decision against Ray Cooper III. That counts for one of the ones over in his record. He also has an eye poke against Nikolai Oleksiakhin earlier on this season. And then he was able to beat Alexei Konchenko. Now, Matt, you have a close fight against Ray Cooper III. You beat a decent wrestler in a guy like Konchenko. You're taking on one of the best wrestlers and just grinders out there in the game in Magomed Kerimov. This guy hasn't lost a fight in forever. This is going to be a tough night out for the Swede here.
It really will be. And I watched quite a bit of Sadibou leading up to this because I wanted to see, hey, does he have a chance? And I've come to a conclusion, Craig. Not really. Like, he has a really nice striking game. He invests a lot in the leg kicks. He is somebody who does go to the leg and the body early. He invests in the type of attacks you would actually like to see him invest in when he does fight a wrestler. You know, you want to take away the front leg. You want to take some of that explosiveness from the wrestler so that they don't have that type of energy to take you down. The issue is that he does rely a lot on his kicks. And what are wrestlers really good at timing takedowns off of? Kicks. And for Magomed, and I do struggle with his last name.
Magomed Kerimov.
There we go. I do feel like his game is just one of those games where it's the perfect opposite to Sadibou's. And it really sucks because for Magomed, he isn't afraid to get hit and keep on moving forward. And he does have a pretty high level of competition. A name that I probably meet, A name that means too much to me on his record is that Bojan Veličković fight. I was a big fan of his when he was in the UFC, and I knew he had a bad loss to Darren Till, but I still thought, hey, that's a good fighter who, listen, he might not get ranked, or on his best day, he might only ever make it to 13th, but, like, I thought that was a good win. And then he beat Ray Cooper III, and then he beat John Howard, and he kept on beating not only good names, but recognizable names that you kind of know from their time in the UFC, and guys who have made their name outside the UFC, and at a certain point, you were just kind of waiting for Megaman to make his way over to the UFC or Bellator, and that's kind of the position that I feel like we're in right now.
You look at it for Magomed Kerimov. His last loss was back in 2015 to the former ONE Championship middleweight champ, Vitaly Big Dash. And then you go up through his list. I mean, geez, we're talking big names. It was Herman Torrado, his first fight with PFL. But then Veličković, Kusha, then Cooper, then Howard, Curtis, and then Curtis Millender, and he finished him by Ezekiel choke.
That was ridiculous.
I mean, Magomed Kerimov is one of those guys. I know when the PFL came in, you weren't the biggest fan, and we can air
Listen,
that.
Magomed Kerimov isn't going to make a ton of endorsement money. Nike's not going to come to his door and say, hey, we want to put your highlight reel in our commercial. But he wins fights, and that's all that really matters at the end of the day. People aren't going to like it, but it is true. He is going to get great head position. He's going to get a lot of takedowns. You might kind of get up from it, and he's going to destroy your base and take you back down. It's not the most aesthetically pleasing fighter to watch, but until somebody can stop him from doing his game plan, then why would he ever divert from it?
Make sure you check out his socials. He trains with some of the best guys in the world. For Magomed Kerimov, open a minus 720 favorite. He's a minus 607 right now, best fight odds. For Saidabou Si, opened up a plus 500. He's plus 414. Matt, if I had to guess what we have for votes
over 85%.
I'm going to go with over 90%.
Fair enough.
And Matt, we have 321 total votes, 97% Magomed Kerimov, 66% by submission. And the real story here is the fact that this fight was originally supposed to be Joao Zeferino's fight. He had 8 points in the season. He's out due to injury. So then they went with the fifth-ranked C, who had 4 points, to take on Magomed Kerimov, who had five. And originally, you had Saidabou Si, who was supposed to take on one, Gleison Tibau. So unfortunate that we lose Tibau and C, because that would have been a good striker's paradise. But in this fight, listen, Tibau probably grind him out. But in this fight, yeah, we're both going with Russia's Magomed Kerimov.
Here's the kind of good news. If Magomed Kerimov ever does make his way over to the UFC, the welterweight division is stacked with wrestlers at the top of the division, so it would be really interesting to see how his grappling stacks up against the Gilbert Burns, the Kamaru Usmans, the Colby Covingtons of the world. I understand a lot of people are going to scoff at that, no, but, like, that's the level of grappling he does have. I don't think he has the striking or, you know, maybe the well-rounded games that some of those other guys possess, but again, until somebody in the PFL can stop just his takedown-heavy offense, why would he ever switch?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you've got Magomed Kerimov competing on this week's PFL card, and then you've got the wild man Magomedov on the Bellator card, and that guy's got a fun fight against Rafion Stotts. You're not going to want to miss that. The Bellator 264 previews, as well as our PFL coverage and the interview with Clay Collard in full with JHK, so make sure you keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. I like the way you touch the floor when you drop. The champ is here! The champ is here! Yes. Listen, I'm no Jadakiss, but the champ is here, Matt. And listen, it's a tale of two champions. You're the former Bellator welterweight champ, the Red King, Canada's own, Rory McDonald, taking on Brada Boy, Ray Cooper III, representing Hawaii. You know the lineage. You know that he beat the hell out of Jake Shields twice, who had beaten his father years past. It was a great coming-of-age story the first time. And then the second time, it was unnecessary punishment.
Kind of gross.
Ultimately, Ray Cooper III, he was able to cash in the money in the bank in the second season of the PFL, but not the first season, because that was all Magomed Kerimov, who's also on this card, who I think, if he didn't miss last year's playoffs, probably would have been a two-time champ like Lance Palmer.
It's a whole hell of a lot more fun with Ray Cooper III at the top, though.
Natan Schulte. Now, for Ray Cooper III entering this season, you have to win the belt back. And he beat Jason Poney by submission. He looked amazing in that fight. He had a decision win his last time out against Nikolai Alexiakhin, a guy who a lot of people were excited about coming into the PFL. He had that fight against Saidabou Si, where you have an eye poke, it ends it. For the Red King, Rory McDonald, though, he had one of the weirdest fights ever his last time out. I was recording early stoppage on, it must have been a Wednesday or Thursday night. I'm sitting here, I'm paying attention to the fights. It's a good night of fights. Oh, okay, John Franklin. All right, well, Gleison Tibau is coming out to fight Rory McDonald. I'm going to half pay attention. So if my eyes list to the left, nobody worry about it. If it's an audio podcast only, nobody cares. So I'm watching this fight, and then all of a sudden I went, whoa. They made the wrong decision there, and it was just so weird, the fact that Gleison Tibau won that fight against Rory McDonald, because for Rory, he loses to Douglas Lima, takes some time off, fights Curtis Millender, and then it was like, holy cow, Rory McDonald found that instinct, because he got a finish, and it was so quick, and he took Millender down, which is kind of the blueprint, but he was able to get a really great win. So for Rory McDonald, he beats Curtis Millender in impressive fashion. Then he loses to Gleison Tibau. He outstruck him that fight 81-32. Now, total strikes never tell the whole story of a fight, but it was insane. Chael Sonnen even put out a conspiracy theory video about it. So it's crazy that that happened. Ray Cooper III continues to win. Rory McDonald's in a weird spot. But I love the fight because Rory McDonald has those defensive hips. Those defensive hips.
He does
hips.
Have defensive hips.
You love to see it. Could Ray Cooper III expend himself too early? What do you think?
I honestly think Rory McDonald's like 35% of the fighter who went into the fight with Robbie Lawler. And that might be a low percentage, but he's taken ungodly amounts of damage throughout his career. If he was a boxer, like, people wouldn't want him to fight anymore. And that's just the truth. Like, Rory McDonald has taken damage to his leg, to his body, and to his head that few fighters will ever even think about taking, much less have to be in there and take. And the thing about Rory McDonald is that he doesn't accept damage on the feet well at all. You brought up the striking numbers from the Gleison Tibau fight. And listen, I don't watch a lot of PFL, but after hearing about that decision, I went back and I rewatched the main event. Rory McDonald, the majority of his strikes are in top position on the ground. On the feet, though, Gleison Tibau boxes up Rory McDonald. That's a real thing that happened. 49-year-old Gleison Tibau boxed up Rory McDonald? I know he's not that old, and I know USADA's not a thing in PFL, but it's really disturbing when you see a guy in Rory McDonald, who at one point was, like, doing the defense of 1,000 bees in the face of Tyron Woodley, get boxed up by Gleison Tibau, who's so far past his prime. Like, Gleison Tibau got cut from the UFC 5 years ago. Like, he's been away for a while. This isn't a fighter near his prime. And I understand. It should have been a win for Rory McDonald. And the takedowns, the top control, should have been scored more heavily than the strikes of Gleison Tibau. All I'm saying is that the areas that Tibau is having success in aren't the areas that you want him to be having success in against a guy like Rory McDonald. Rory McDonald, at least after the first Douglas Lima fight, has become way more of a wrestler than he ever was before. Listen, he was never a top tier striker. He was always someone who mixed in the wrestling, mixed in the grappling, and the striking. But he's gone almost to the GSP level of once GSP got the title and figured out, okay, I can fight in a more defensive way and I'm just going to win a lot easier and not take any damage. The difference is that Rory McDonald doesn't have the wrestling background or just the wrestling skills that GSP did, and he doesn't have the defensive striking that GSP had. The great thing about GSP was that he uses karate, A, to set up his wrestling, but also as a way to dart in and out of striking exchanges. My problem with Rory McDonald is that he's kind of like Allen Iverson. Allen Iverson was really good until he was 29 years old, but once that athleticism went away a little bit, it's like, okay, well, you're undersized and you don't shoot that great, so now that you're not faster than everybody, you're kind of human. With Rory McDonald, he was great when he was young and when he did have that athletic edge over a lot of guys, but he's got to this weird point where it's like his mental capacity might be at all time. He might know more about MMA today than he ever has. I just don't think athletically, with all the damage he's taken, his body can keep up with that anymore. And it sucks. Like, if he was able to go on one of those TRTV tour things, and let's say he could kind of reverse the aging process, and physically, he could be the fighter he was back at 25, but he had the MMA knowledge of today, then he should probably be able to walk through PFL. It's just the fact that you're getting outboxed by guys like Gleison Tibau, and now you're probably going to have to resort to wrestling against Ray Cooper, who's gotten better at wrestling recently. I really look at this as being like, okay, Rory McDonald's going to have to eat quite a few strikes from Ray Cooper. I don't think he accepts damage all that well anymore, and I never thought these words would come out of my mouth, but I honestly think Ray Cooper III is going to beat Rory McDonald.
This is really weird because we saw Rory McDonald when he fought Gegard Mousasi. It wasn't working on the feet. Desperation ankle pick. End of the fight, Gegard Mousasi.
In the second round, too. And that was the real thing. Desperation's fine if it's like the fourth round and you begin beat up. If it's like a Max Holloway, Calvin Kattar type of a fight and you're Calvin Kattar just throwing spinning elbows, then it makes sense. And I agree 100%. He ate a few jabs, and then immediately once the damage started to go up, you're 100% right. He panicked and went in for it. I just don't think he's the same fighter he used to be.
Now, that one was a long time ago. Obviously, he had the draw against John Fitch, or the very close fight, majority decision, back with Bellator, so the champ gets to move on. Then he beats Naaman Gracie in a fight that was a little bit back and forth on
it
the mat.
It was a close one.
The one thing that I really like out of Rory McDonald, and then we'll bring it back over to Ray Cooper III, Rory McDonald's been training at a Sanford MMA for a while now. I think a perfect guy that trains there to get ready for a fight like this is Phil Haas, because Phil Haas can strike his way into the clinch to take you down. And you look at it, we're going to be talking about it when we talk about Bellator, because you have Hadzi Bestaev that's going to be fighting, who fought Phil Haas in Contender Series, and Phil knocked him out with a counter right hand. But for Phil, perfect guy to replicate Ray Cooper. For Ray Cooper, with the wrestling, with everything, you've seen Rory McDonald types before in the past. And for Ray Cooper, who does he struggle against, really? Guys with insane cardio? Maybe a guy with a jiu-jitsu edge? Rory McDonald could be that guy. That's why this fight is so very close. If we have a look at the odds for this one, McDonald open a minus 210 favorite. He's a minus 127 right now. Since last weekend and now, the odds have shifted about 50 points. For Ray Cooper III, open a plus 175. He's a plus 103 right now. Matt, the Tapology votes are a surprise, as they are to you. 395 votes. 65% McDonald, 35% Cooper. Majority of Cooper fans think he's going to win by knockout. What do you say?
This is what I always come back to. How much does Vicente Luque trade at Sanford MMA? Because Henry Hooft and Gilbert Burns were both in his corner over the weekend.
But he was at Cerrado in Brazil.
I understand. I'm just saying, the two main guys from that gym were still there. The only thing is, if Luque is training with Rory McDonald, let's say at Sanford MMA, then he would be the perfect guy for Ray Cooper III. You're talking about a power puncher who can stand on the outside, who has good defensive grappling. No, I honestly, Luque's way better than Ray Cooper III, but they have kind of similar games. So if Luque was... They can both strike on the outside with power is the thing, and I think that's the thing Rory McDonald really has to worry about. But Rory McDonald, this fight really comes down to the boxing, I think. I think it comes down to, if Rory McDonald goes for takedowns, but he's getting hit while he goes for the takedowns, then I don't think he's going to shoot for many takedowns. And if that's the case, then I don't think Rory McDonald, at least at 35 years old, which is wild, because when we talk about age, it's kind of like...
He's only 32.
But it's kind of like with Jose Aldo. Jose Aldo's 34, but he's really 71 when you take into account all the damage and all the MMA years. Rory McDonald's 32, but he's much older in MMA years. He's taken a lot of damage. He's been a professional fighter since he was in his teens. That's another thing people forget about. Rory McDonald was kind of like Canelo Alvarez at a certain point, where it was like, hey, this is going to be the golden boy. He was like the promised, I guess, spiritual successor.
The next successor. GSP.
Thank you. That's what I was looking for. He was supposed to be the next GSP. And he started at such a young age that when you are taking damage at a young age, when you are kind of expected to be almost like a Luka Doncic, but for MMA, the thing is, you can play basketball when you're 14 and you just get better at it as you get older. When you're doing MMA at 14 and 15, your body's taking a lot of wear and tear at a really young age. And it's not giving it the time to recover. At 32, I just don't think Rory McDonald's 32 when you just look at his age. I think he's much older in MMA years. And for all those reasons, I think this is gonna be Ray Cooper III's big coming out party. I know he's had big wins in the past, but I still think Rory McDonald carries a bit of a name with UFC fans. And I do think if Cooper III, let's say, hey, he lands a flurry against McDonald kind of covers up against the cage, and let's say Cooper ends it with a big flurry, then I do feel like, listen, he won't be a big star in PFL, but it'll bring over some UFC fans.
If you look at it for Rory McDonald, I think the path is there. Back up, pop the jab, maybe throw a right hand.
Shoot for a single leg every now and then.
Shoot for a single leg, and when Ray Cooper III shoots, move your hips and push the head. I mean, that's really easy for armchair quarterback Craig to say. For Ray Cooper III, though, he's the type of guy, I didn't really like the Luque thing, because Cooper is going to throw the overhands, and he's going to try and crash in, take you down, rip you down, get on top, and then... just kind of impose as well from
Michael
there.
Chandler also
good head position, there. Good upper body strength, kind of like a Michael Chandler type. So for Rory McDonald, you know, game plans there. Same thing for Ray Cooper III. I threw it out there over in the YouTube community tab. Wanted to kind of read some of the responses we got from Beast Conk. I don't know, man. Ray Cooper III is nasty. James Court says, I got Cooper. If Rory can't get him down, he's screwed like Shields twice. Another one from Lawrence M. The wrestling and pressure of Ray Cooper may be too much for Rory. The threat of the takedown will compound the effectiveness of Cooper's striking. So it's Cooper, most likely by decision. It goes on, but there's a lot of people going with Ray Cooper III. I have a tricky one with it. Akash Deep has Rory, so he's here every single week. Hey, shouts to you on the western tip of Canada, where Rory McDonald is from.
Yes.
But for Rory, yeah, in 2006, he fought Jordan Meehan when they were teenagers, and they were both supposed to be stars.
This is what I mean.
I love Jordan Meehan, but his fight against Jason Jackson made me sad because he just ate a lot of shots from distance. Yeah. Hopefully, for Rory McDonald, maybe he's able to regain some of that glory. He gets a win over Ray Cooper III, and he fights either Sadibou C or Magomed Karimov, but I also have Ray Cooper III as the underdog in this one. Now, don't take all of our picks for law. this is having fun with the PFL, but I do think Cooper III has a good opportunity in this fight. But we know that Rory McDonald is definitely
ground. They have the same record, too, which is wild. I don't know why that just jumped out to me.
Somebody's 22-7-1 has to go. The final pick here is Cooper?
It is, ever so slightly. Again, Rory McDonald, if this is 2015 Rory McDonald, then he would win this fight 10 times out of 10. I don't think it would be competitive. If that was the guy who fought the Tyron Woodleys of the world, the Jake Ellenbergers of the world, the Tarek Saffedines in Halifax, Nova Scotia, then yeah, that guy would probably blow the doors off Ray Cooper. It's just, it's not the same fighter anymore. He is a little bit past his prime, even though he is only 32. I just don't think it's the same fighter that we were dealing with pre-Robbie Lawler fight, or even pre-first Douglas Lima fight. I just think those fights took a lot out of him. I know he won the first Douglas Lima fight, but that was another fight where he took so much damage in that even if you look at him afterwards, he fought in a more defensive way. I like Ray Cooper in this one.
9 inches of reach and 5 inches of height for Rory McDonald, but Ray Cooper III, often the smaller guy, and 22 times he's won, 7 times he's lost, and he has a draw in there too. But Matt, both of us going with Hawaii's own Ray Cooper III. Let us know down below in the comment section who you have in this fight and what your thoughts are on the PFL playoff structure. Can't wait for the season to kick off. This one, the playoff version, starts on Friday. You're not going to want to miss that, as well as our Bellator 264 previews. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. Attention listeners across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to H-Town, do we have a pube problem? They said that, not me. If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with their fourth generation of brand new lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet. Mars, I guess? You want to kick it there? Venus? You going to Mercury? With the brand new Performance Package 4.0, the orbits in your pants will feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job. From the leaders in male grooming, join the over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get their rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com with promo code FNP. You're going to get 20% off and free shipping. Matt, they're talking about balls in orbit. Yeah. And listen, this is one of those brands that we've been lucky enough to work with for the past, what has it been, 6 months? We're going to work with them another 3 more months of Manscaped. You guys have been great in supporting our sponsor, and we absolutely love them. And Matt, they're asking for a funny ball trimming story. Listen, I shot the videos for the last couple of FNP promos where I brought this on the road. And it's been absolutely great. I talk about it all the time. The 1, 2, 3, travel lock, boom, boom, boom. And then all you have to do, 1, 2, 3. Oh, it's going down. And then all of a sudden, there we go. We have it. So it's worked absolutely great. But not together, but separately, we're Ball Time Shower Shavers. And yeah, this product's worked very good for us.
It is really nice. Now, you saw how shiny Jeff Bezos' head was when he went into space on his rocket. And since this is a rocket-themed ad, if he only had one of these Manscaped, you could assume how smooth some other surfaces on Jeff Bezos would also be.
Hell yeah!
Hell yeah!
I mean, just a guy just ripping promos for space. So ultimately, get ready for an out-of-world experience, fellas. If so, look no further than Performance Package 4.0. You're going to get that shed. It's a great toiletry bag that goes along with you. It also comes with the Manscaped boxers. And listen, abort your hairy balls and Buzz Lightyear and that Woody with Manscaped. And Matt, the last thing that I want to share with the people, because they know this, this little ditty comes with the Weed Whacker. And if you've ever heard about the Weed Whacker, it's also waterproof like the Lawnmower 4.0. It uses a 9,000 RPM motor-powered 360-degree rotary dual-blade system. The nose and ear hair trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. And if you're me, you light that sucker up on camera to prove that it actually works, because I really have a nose hair problem. So Matt, if the people also have nose hair problems, they can check them out. Get 20% off and free shipping with code FNP at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with code FNP at manscaped.com for a clean Trinity and beyond. Your space balls will thank you. And we will thank you as well. Make sure you help out the sponsor. Helps out the boys. We get some great videos coming up. You're not going to want to miss them. So keep locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. Big time fight coming up this weekend at Bellator 264. This one at middleweight, we have Savage Ty Gwerder taking on Kachimurat Bestayev. And if you want to have fun with it, like the Robin Black drop that I have now, His friends call him Kadzi. And Matt, for Kadjimurat Bestayev, this is a guy that last competed on Dana White's Contender Series 2020 about a year ago and got cold-cocked by Phil Haas into oblivion.
It was bad.
And now he's coming back. And for Bestayev, he's one of those guys, you look at his record, 10-4, every single win, a finish, 5 by knockout, 5 by submission. Maybe not the hottest level of competition. He beat Robert Allensworth, who was 1-8. He beat Eric Smith, who was 4-3. Both of those with Gladiator Challenge. I've read some differing reviews of Gladiator Challenge out there on the internet today to get ready for some of these fights. But he's a guy that moved to the States when he was a youngish man. He came from a spot in the world where there was fighting and he wanted just to be a soccer player. And now he ends up here. Wow. He's got a big opportunity taking on the man himself, Ty Guerter. Nickname is Savage. He lost his last fight against Dalton Rasta. A lot of fun to go back and watch that one. I know I watched that one live as it happened. And in that fight, Ty Guerter from a southpaw stance just went for too many head kicks. And you can't go for that many head kicks. He's a guy that trains out of Extreme Couture. And apparently, in my searchings and lurkings, I found out that he's been involved with two very important women in MMA. Apparently went out with Jessica Rose Clark at one point. And now he's going out with King Casey O'Neill. So pretty cool stuff for Ty Guerter. Again, a guy that fights out of Extreme Couture. You're only going to get some of the biggest names to train with there. He's a guy that represents Hawaii proudly. You have a lot of Extreme Couture guys. 10th Island represent Dan Ige. Who else? Boston Solomon. I could go on for days. Those are just two off the top of my head. But Matt, we have an interesting fight here because for both of these guys, you're primarily going to see them strike. I know for Bestayev, I've seen him lock up some defensive submissions before. He gets submissions against not the greatest level of competition. And in his last fight against Phil Haas, kept his hands low AF.
That's the problem with Kadjimurat. He just has terrible striking defense. It's been a problem for him throughout his whole entire career. We talk about some fighters where they might get knocked out by a technique and then they kind of fix that problem. Or, oh, you'll see like their hands glued to their face the next fight. He never has that. Like, he's been stopped in the past. He'll get stopped again in the future because he does. He has slow feet, but also hands down. And that's not a very good combination to have. You can have your hands low if you have footwork like a Wonderboy Thompson or Sean O'Malley, but if you are kind of that stalking forward type of a style, unless you're like Fedor Emelianenko, it's just really hard to get away with in MMA. And for Ty Guerter, I knew he didn't look great in his last fight, because you're right, he didn't just spam left high kicks like they were going in his style, but he does have a good variety of striking. He's not afraid to throw in combination, and he is a good fighter. I'm not going to say he's like Holly Holm with this, because Holly Holm only throws like two combinations, just spams them, but he's good at ending his combinations with kicks. He will throw like boom, boom, and then end with a kick. It is very Carlos Condit-y, but again, I don't really want to put Ty Guerter in that Carlos Condit level of like, oh, he's that good at throwing a combination. It's just something that he does do, and against lower level fighters like Kadjimurat, I feel like it's going to be something he's going to be able to get away with consistently throughout this fight.
This is a really tricky one because for Bestayev, he comes in here at 6'6" with 76 inches of reach at middleweight. He's going to be one of the longest middleweights you're going to find, and he throws good kicks. He'll throw a hook kick, question mark kick. Like, he throws a lot of weird techniques. Training out of American Kickboxing Academy. And this is the big thing with Kadjimurat Bestayev. His friends call him Kadzi. If you want to have fun, go on his Instagram, because he's trained at some of the biggest gyms with some of the biggest fighters you've ever seen. I've seen him at King's MMA. I've seen him in Florida. I've seen him everywhere. I feel like he's one of those guys. He's a big body that can replicate a lot of different fighters. So, again, if you like Bestayev in this fight, you probably really do like his variety of strikes, and you like him from range as well. He's one of those guys that likes to bait people in and then throw his own counters. Obviously, didn't work against him or for him against Phil Haas. But again, I've seen him get taken down in the past where he's able to throw up a defensive submission. He's competent enough on the ground that he's not a wrestler. He is a striker, but he has some submission abilities in his back pocket. Against Ty Guerter, it's going to be a tricky night in the office. If you have a look at the odds for this one, Guerter open a minus, or sorry, this is crazy, a plus 275. He's the biggest mover and shaker on the card. He's a minus 272 right now. If you look at it for Kadzi Bestayev, he opened up a minus 350. He's a plus 213 right now. Over on Tapology, total votes for this one, 535 total votes, 77% Guerter, 74% by knockout. I think Ty Guerter is going to win this one. Maybe Bestayev's able to hit him with a counter. I think Guerter's got the pressure. I actually liked his fight against Dalton Rasta because Rasta is normally able to absolutely control everybody. And even though Guerter was in some bad positions, he lost by decision. That's not the end of the world. Again, he's been a guy that spent some time with Bellator. He was 4-0, one fight outside, three fights with LFA. Since he's been with Bellator, 1-2, lost to Joseph Krier by decision, beat George Takos, and then he lost ultimately to Rasta. but I like the ceiling of Goerter. He feels like one of those guys that Bellator is going to keep around. He's on a 4-fight deal, though, so this is probably the one that you got to win if you want to stick around.
No, I would agree with that 100%. Bestayev, I watch a lot of NBA Summer League, and there's a guy for the Knicks called Jericho Sims. I highly recommend you Google him. He's 7'2" and can jump to the moon. But there's my whole theory about if you've just been really, really big your whole life, you don't really have to learn like the minor intricacies of most skills because you can just rely on being big and strong. And that's kind of Bestayev's whole game. He's just big. And at the end of the day, I don't think being big is going to give him a lot of wins over in Bellator.
All right, Matt, both of us in this fight going with Extreme Couture's own Ty Goerter to get the win. Can't wait for this fight and this entire main card. We've got a lot of big prospects and a title fight up at the top. The man himself, Gegard Mousasi, taking on John Salter, Jim O's guy. You're not going to want to miss that. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. Somebody's O has to go. Big time fight coming up this weekend at heavyweight. We have all day Davion Franklin taking on Everett Cummings. And Matt, for Davion Franklin, this is a prospect that a lot of MMA fans probably know, who made his debut about a year and a half ago against the guy that fought Jake Hager and JW Kaiser. And you go back to that fight, JW Kaiser was in, as the broadcast put it, the best shape of his life. He was like 220 pounds and he looked really good and he was really offensive. And then when he was just kind of lunging in for a couple of shots, Davion Franklin timed a double leg, took him down, and beat the bejesus out of him. And
it was hard to watch.
Anything about Davion Franklin, he is that guy at 265 pounds. I know you can make some comparisons to like a Tyrell Fortune where he was undefeated, he was finishing guys. Davion Franklin is that guy. Again, a JUCO wrestling national qualifier, third in the nation in collegiate wrestling at a time, college football player, and a Bellator prospect development program guy. He also won the Distinguished Award. He got the scholarship to go to Jackson Wink. This guy is his blue chip. It's a blue chip prospect. But he's taking on an undefeated fighter in Everett Cummings, where a lot of people sit there and scratch their head. It's hard to find fight tape of Everett Cummings. It's hard to find him on social media. Trust me, for me to find the picture that you see in front of you, it was not easy. But this guy went 5-0 as an amateur from 2010 to 2012. He's 15-0 as a pro. He has one fight where it's a no contest due to illegal downward elbows. And that's where I have to pump the brakes because apparently he should have lost that fight. It was considered a win for Sean Johnson. And then they overturned it after the fact. Gladiator Challenge, little bit of a different promotion. I have to really, really caution everybody on the fact that this guy is undefeated now. He has had some fights in different promotions. He beat Jason Galza back at Bellator 132 when he was 7-0, and Jason Galza was 2-1. That fight back in 2015, I throw up a lot of red flags at the fact that Everett Cummings is undefeated, is a heavyweight. And the other thing, this guy started his career off at middleweight. So could you compare him to a Jake Collier? Maybe. But when I look at this one, Franklin is the blue chip prospect with Bellator. They typically win. Cummings is the undefeated fighter that maybe they want to throw you in there to lose.
From nowhere, who nobody knows.
So Everett Cummings has a good opportunity to add to the record and prove a lot of people wrong. I just have a really hard time seeing it because there's so many red flags on this fight.
Has Everett Cummings' whole life just been to fight Davion Mitchell this weekend? Like,
well, it's Davion Frankel.
Davion Frankel, sorry. It is just really weird because it is a lot of, oh, that guy's on his record, and he doesn't really have a quality win, if you want to be honest. And for Franklin, I think the wrestling's going to be more than enough. For Cummings, he does have a lot of submission wins on his record. And listen, if he is able to get something off, it might be a submission off his back. But I have a very, very hard time telling you that a guy who has wins over the likes of CJ Levesque is going to come out there and beat a guy like Franklin, who, and again, it is kind of funny. You had brought up like the homepage for Jackson Wink's like page, and they were saying what Franklin's good at, and it was his wrestling and physical strength. Physical strength is the first thing that just jumps out at you. Like, he really is that guy. And his takedowns are a unique mix of finesse and just athleticism. Because it's not just the fact that you can go out there and shoot power double legs and get them. Yes, he can do that. But there is more of a finesse to his wrestling game if he really has to get into it. I just don't think Everett Cummings is the guy who's going to make him go deep into his bag. I think he's going to be able to do pretty much everything surface value. Shoot any kind of double leg takedown and probably win this fight via ground and pound in the first round. We've seen this happened before, and you kind of set this up almost too perfectly. We've seen this is the guy who Bellator obviously wants to win against the undefeated fighter, but their record's not all that great. I just don't really know what Cummings is going to have for Franklin.
Eric Cummings, if you go out, you can watch his last fight, quite easily fought Son Davis. And in that fight, Cummings, he's going to go in, he's going to try and wrestle you a little bit. He gets a takedown, he gets reversed, and then his opponent's on top of him for a large percentage of the first round. It was one of those fights where it was outdoors in the cage, and a lot of people are yelling as soon as it hits the mat, "Stand them up! Stand them up!"
Just like a Halifax?
Like a Halifax, Nova Scotia crowd. I was going to say that. You stole my thunder. And then he gets taken down. He ends up with a submission. But to me, Everett Cummings can win if Franklin absolutely blows his wad in the first round and has no cardio left. Because for Davion Franklin, the striking's coming. You train with the John Jones of the world every day. It's going to start to come. But for Davion Franklin, he throws a lot into his strikes. He strikes the clinch. He throws wild kicks, which is something that really surprised me. I like Davion Franklin in this fight. He opened as a minus 200 favorite. He's minus 244 right now on best fight odds out of the site that have odds. Cummings open a plus 160. He's a plus 194 right now. The total Tapology votes, 522 votes, 78% Franklin, 84% by knockout. For the 22% that have Cummings, 37% by submission, 30% by knockout, I get Davion Franklin in this fight. This is a very biased one because it's just really tricky. I know that underdogs every now and again pop up. They beat the Bellator guy, but to me, this just doesn't feel like one of those.
You can't sit on every fence. I think this fight's going to look like the Revenant and the Bear taking on Leonardo DiCaprio. I really think Davion Franklin's going to get one takedown and end this via ground and pound.
Good luck to Everett Cummings. Both of us going with Jackson Wink's own Davion Franklin. Matt, big fights on this card.
Oh,
big,
yeah.
Big fights. I can't wait for it. Magomedov has his hands full with Rafion Stotts or vice versa. I don't know. I love the fight. It's going to be Scramble City. And in the main event, middleweight title on the line. Gegard Mousasi taking on Jones Salter. You're not going to want to miss that. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. This is one of Michael C. Williams' dream fights. We have Rafion Stotts, his nickname Supa, taking on a guy who I'm sure he loves to go, Magomed!
Magomedov!
And listen, I absolutely love the fight. Magomedov is one of those guys. He is one of few that have wins. There's only two of them. There's Magomedov, and there's Aljamain Sterling. You can take that one to the bank that have wins over Pyotr Yan. But for Magomedov, his next time out when he took on Pyotr Yan, he got beat, and he got beat soundly.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that's had a lot of really interesting fights. He's been a champion outside of the promotion of Bellator, former ACA champ. And if you look through it for some of the names on the record, maybe all the way up through until he fought like Pada Robatsky, who was 23-3 back in 2014, then it starts to get better. He has the loss to Pyotr Yan. He has the win against Pyotr Yan from back in 2016. But since then, Mateus Matos, that was the debut over with Bellator back in 2020. He was then able to fight CJ Hamilton and finish CJ Hamilton. This fight was originally scheduled for back in July, but it was rescheduled. He was also supposed to fight Jared Scoggins and ended up with poor CJ Hamilton, who took the fight on short notice. Magomedov is a very fun fighter to watch because he's one of those guys that can open up with his hands and he's good with his hands. But then if he has to wrestle, boy, oh boy, is he one of the best ones out there. And across the cage in Rafion Stotts, this is a guy that I think the UFC missed the boat on. You could say that for both guys, but Rafion Stotts is one of those guys, his only loss probably would have got him a UFC contract because it got Mirab Duashvili into the show. Since then, his 5-1 in, very impressive, beat Rafa Costa, beat Chaden Lealoa when he made his Bellator debut, beat Cass Bell. Not only did he beat Cass Bell, he took the O and he outgrappled him and submitted him, which is a big surprise to a lot of big Bellator fans. You know who you are over in the Facebook group. He beats Keith Lee, and then his last time out, he beat the gentleman Josh Hill, Canada's finest. I love this fight because it should be Scramble City. If it's striking, though, Magomedov's going to have a little bit of an advantage because Stotts normally, it's big strikes into the clinch. But I love this fight on paper. This one's a great one.
Oh, this is a phenomenal fight. But I do agree with what you have to say about Rafion Stotts. He's not a bad striker, but I don't love his striking game. He isn't that weird mixture of I don't have a lot of power and I don't have a lot of volume. He's good defensively, don't get me wrong, but he does lead a lot with his power shots and it does leave him open. And
now,
that's...
Now, with him, I just want to cut you off. He does train with your current Bellator Bantamweight champion. That's what has to make this fight weird because it feels like the winner of this one, you're probably setting yourself up for a title shot, and I doubt he wants to fight Sergio.
Well, this is the thing. When I think of Rufus Moore fighters nowadays, Paul Felder's basically retired. I never really think about Anthony Pettis. I think about Ralphion Stotts and Gerald Meerschaert, of all the people, when I think about Rufus Moore. Those are the two first guys that come to mind. But it is weird. Stotts goes to Rufus Moore, a primary striking gym, but I would say his grappling is the best part of his game. He is a phenomenal wrestler.
Oh, it is.
Even go back to the Keith Lee fight. Like, Keith Lee is a good wrestler. I know he's not the most experienced fighter in the world, but still, he's a good wrestler who has good scrambles, and he had nothing for Ralphion Stotts. Stotts was able to keep him on the far end of his strikes. He's able to jump into a lot of flying knees. He just really had kind of disdain for the striking of Keith Lee. And that was an interesting fight because it finally started to show Stotts on his feet for extended periods of time because it was up to him. Because a lot of the times it's okay. We're striking. You might land a couple shots. I'm going to shoot him for the takedown. We have seen more of a progression out of his striking, and it will be interesting to see what he does decide to do against Magomedov. Because if Magomedov is the one having the success in the striking, I actually think Ralphion Stotts can get a takedown on Magomedov. I don't think it's going to be really easy for him, and there will be a lot of scrambles, like you had said, but I do think he'll be able to secure at least one takedown. The real question comes to, what will he be able to get off with that takedown? Because with Stotts, his jiu-jitsu really is phenomenal, and once the takedown itself has been completed, even though he is such a phenomenal wrestler, you really have to take his jiu-jitsu seriously. And for Magomedov, defensively, he's so good, I wonder if we will just get a lot of them canceling each other out in the clinch. I think this fight will be phenomenal, but there is one part of me where it's like, okay, they're both so good at scrambling, they're both so good at wrestling, they both have really good cardio, can we just see these guys wrestling kind of cancel each other out against the cage? I think there's an opportunity for that, but honestly, I do like the game of Magomedov a little bit more than Stotts. I feel like he's just got the more developed MMA game out of the two. Stotts is good at wrestling, he's good at jiu-jitsu, and he's good at striking, don't get me wrong, but Magomedov has all the in-betweens that you also look for. He's got the striking into the clinch, he's got the, oh, my opponent's starting to get up, I won't let them fully get up to their feet, I'll break their base back down. It's just all those in-betweens that you can really appreciate, and those are all the things that you really only get from experience against the highest level guys, and I do think Magomedov has the strength of scale. Edge between these two.
Normally, when I make comparisons of great guys to train with for fights like this, for Ralphion Stotts, he has Sergio Pettis to work with for this fight. Ralphion Stotts, I talked about it. I still think Corey Sandhagen beat TJ Dillashaw, but so Ralphion Stotts having him to train with for Sandhagen, perfect guy to get ready for a guy like Dillashaw. And we made it known in that Sandhagen UFC video. For Magomed Kerimov, he's a ride or die with a lot of guys from Russia. The main guy that he has to train with is Zabit Magomed Sharipov. And you see those guys featured prominently. For Zabit, I think it's more learning the finesse and some of the technique on some of those unorthodox strikes.
Has he been training, though, much?
Nah.
I don't think he's been in the gym for a while, though, Craig.
I think he might have actually been. But to get ready for some of his fights and to gain that little bit of insight and that little bit of knowledge, I think a guy like Zabit, especially where we saw Zabit's brother having his first fight with Bellator just a few weeks ago.
Oh, I agree 100%.
There's a lot of great guys to have to get ready for fights. I think just having that knowledge, that voice in your ear of a guy like Zabit to kind of learn those intricacies. Because, again, the wrestling and the grappling, maybe they cancel each other out. If I have a guy like that in my head of, oh, okay, this is a strike you need to throw. Switch your stance. Throw the spinning back fist or the back kick, whatever it might be. You like to hear that. Don't necessarily love the odds in this fight. Magomedov, open to minus 300. He's minus 488 right now. Ralphion Stotts, open to plus 240. He's plus 353. If we have a look at the Tapology votes, I'm scrolling down. It's new to us and it's new to you. Holy crow. 648 total votes, 91% Magomedov, 77% by decision. For the 9% that have Stotts, 84% by decision. I'm not going to pick the underdog, as tempted as I am, but the chalk on this one scares me, and I'm surprised that many fans have Stotts to win. Again, I like Magomedov in the in-between, just like Stranger Things, so I like Magomedov in this fight, but I'm one of those people, I wouldn't be surprised, I wouldn't have him as my FanDuel MVP. I wouldn't be surprised if Stotts was able to do something crazy in this one. I'm going with Magomedov, but I'm just surprised by everything here.
Really?
Yeah,
I gotta be
honest.
I've never been the biggest on Stotts' game, if I'm being honest. Again, I think he's a good but not great fighter. The thing I will say about him, though, he's beaten a lot of different kinds of opponents, and that really is important. There's a lot of MMA fighters that we look at, and yes, they'll have wins over good fighters, but they just kind of beat the same version of one fighter over and over again. Like, they'll be really good against wrestle boxers. The good thing about Stotts is he's beaten the primary jiu-jitsu guys, he's beaten the primary wrestlers, he's beaten the primary strikers. He does have a good variety of opponents, so I'm sure he'll be ready for whatever Magomedov brings. I just don't think he'll have enough and he'll be able to keep it up for a sustained effort throughout 15 minutes. I think maybe the first 4 minutes can look competitive, but I do think Magomedov will be able to start to get his reads as this fight progresses, and I do like Magomedov's cardio more than Stotts in this one.
I'm nervous about it. I've got Magomedov. You're more confident. You've got Magomedov, both of us going with Magomedov to get the win. I can't wait for this fight and the rest of the fights in the main card that you're not going to want to miss, including a big-time main event for that middleweight strap between Gegard Mousasi and Jim O's own John Salters. Keep locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. We've been spending most of our lives living in a striker's paradise, Matt. We have the sleek sheik Sabah Omasi taking on Spartan Andrei Koroshkov, a nickname that's just been tested, well, the test of time. I mean, listen, Cody Stamen, who else?
Since about 300 AD.
Yeah, there's so many different Spartans. But Matt, I absolutely love this fight because we have the former Bellator welterweight champ, Andrei Koroshkov. He was a champ in his early 20s. He's had crazy fights with Douglas Lima. He's had crazy fights with a lot of different people. He probably doesn't fight with Alexander Shlemenko. But in this fight, he's taking on a guy whose favorite song is definitely by Slash on his first compilation album with Andrew Stockdale. Because this guy lives and dies by the sword. And if you know anything about Sabah Omasi, did he have enough punishment against a really tough fighter in Abdulrazak Alhassan? No. So a young, polished Craig Allen at UFC 220 got to see Sabah Omasi get viciously knocked out again by Abdulrazak Alhassan. And Matt, that's pretty much the story of Sabah Omasi's fights. If you look at it, he leaves the UFC, he comes into Bellator. Well, he had a few stops in between, but he fights Micah Tyrrell and knocks him out cold. And then he fights Curtis Milliner and he beats him by decision. And then he knocks out Bobby Volker. And that was one where, hey, I remember Bobby Volker. That's going to be a fun fight. Sabah Omasi finishes him by flying knee and finishes that one up. And then he goes out and fights Paul Daly. And that was one of the most insane fights I've ever seen.
That's probably fight of the year. I don't care what organization's your favorite, but that could probably be fight of the year. Sabah Omasi drops Paul Daly, and now this is an exaggeration, but drops him like 6 times in the first round, just have Paul Daly automatically come back, hit him with that famous left hook, and then just crash Sabah Omasi against the cage. It was a back and forth fight that was so much fun to watch, and that's really the story about Sabah Omasi.
How long ago was that fight, though?
Only 3 months, which is a little bit concerning, and that's the thing. Sabah Omasi is that fighter. He's going to take one to give one. But he will take one and eat one. And that's, again, it's a bit of a disturbing trend. Sabah Omasi takes a lot of damage in his fights. Is it fun to watch? Yeah, it's really, really fun to watch. But is that going to get it done against the top level fighters in Bellator or the UFC? Probably not. And Andrei Koroshkov is a really interesting character because he's great in wrestling. He's got great jiu-jitsu. He's a really accurate striker. Again, I wouldn't say he's got crazy power, but it's not like he's pillow-fisted by any means. He's just a really well-rounded mixed martial artist. But the one weakness he does have is his chin, and it has been cracked in the past. It has been tested. I know even Douglas Lima didn't finish him in their third fight, but he did hurt him with an overhand and then choke him out. And with Koroshkov, it's weird because he gets into a rhythm, but then he'll almost stay in the pocket for that one punch too many. And I know I'm bringing up Douglas Lima losses, but again, in the second Douglas Lima fight, he was doing great against him. He's landing in combination, but he just stands in the pocket for one shot too many, and Lima's able to time a counter off it. Sabah Omasi could do that, but other than that one area, I really don't think Sabah Omasi can go out there and technically strike with a guy like Koroshkov. Koroshkov's really good at striking backwards and forwards. He does have phenomenal footwork. Again, I don't think Koroshkov is a top guy in the division anymore per se, but I still think he's going to be able to beat the Sabah Omasis of the world. Personally, I'd love to see Koroshkov fight like Michael Venom Page. I know Michael Venom Page only fights Pizza Men and then Douglas Lima every now and then, but it would be really nice to see Koroshkov in there with just some other top guys in the division. I just don't think Sabah Omasi at this stage, with that quick turnaround after the Paul Daly fight, I don't think this is the best fight for him. I think Sabah Omasi honestly could get to a Bellator title shot if they did sort of market him the right way, give him the proper matchups on his way up, maybe let him fight David Rickles about 6 times, but I do think that there's a way for Sabah Omasi to get to a title shot. I just don't think it's through a guy like Andrei Koroshkov, who has the accuracy and the volume to pretty much meet whatever striking Sabah Omasi brings to him.
You want to have fun?
Yes.
Go down through Andrei Koroshkov's record. I mean, his first big win was probably who? Derek Krantz ended up in the UFC, beat Marius Aramskis when Marius was doing it, beat Lyman Good to win the belt, then he lost it to Ben Askren, then he beat Nashawn Burrell, Douglas Lima, Benson Henderson. Then he lost to Douglas Lima. Then he beat, this is insane, and I'm not going to go on a tangent, but it upsets me. Chidian Jokowani beats him. Chidian Jokowani should not be on Dana White's Contender Series against a good fighter who's 12-1, but Chidian Jokowani's the guy that, hey, geez, a fight fell out at welterweight, a fight fell out at middleweight. Let's call Chidi up. He shouldn't have to fight on Contender Series. That's my bone
He's
to
probably
pick.
Probably going to win.
But you look at it, finished him in the first round, finished poor old Vaso Bakasevich, who's got just a list of names on his resume, but finished him. That was a fight in Rome at Bellator
203. Pontus Savage looked terrified, though.
Yeah, he didn't look great, but a spinning back kick nonetheless. Loses to Lima, where back and forth, but he gets rocked, and then he gets finished on the mat. Beats Mike Jasper in a fight that probably shouldn't happen. Loses to Lorenz Larkin by split. I'll take it to my grave. I thought Korshkov won it.
He got hurt by every strike.
And then he had that one-off with AMC Fights back earlier on in February of this year where let's let him kind of get some rhythm. Let's let him have a fight. And if it's with AMC Fight Night, so be it. And on that card as well, you talk about the New Stream guys. You had that fight. You had plenty of guys from New Stream there. But I talked about it earlier. Andre Korshkov has been a ride or die with Alexander Shlemenko that I think beat Gegard Mousasi, and I'll talk about that one later on. But Matt, when I look at this fight for Sabah Hamasi, can he land that one big punch? That's really the big question. He comes in a big underdog, open to plus 200. He's a plus 296 right now for Andre Korshkov, open to minus 260. He's a minus 389. And if we go over to Tapology and read the votes, okay, we haven't seen them. Over under, you think it's 75%? Over under?
No, probably over.
All right.
Korshkov's going to win this fight.
587 total votes, 89% Korshkov, 65% by knockout. For the 11% that have Hamasi, 68% by knockout. Somebody's going to win this fight by finish. I don't think it's going to go the distance. So if I went with anything, it's probably that. But I like Andre Korshkov as a tactician, a guy that can move out of the blitzes and the big shots, I think.
The only way I could see it going to decision, but I do agree with your breakdown. If Korshkov gets hit by a big shot early and does decide to implement his wrestling throughout the rest of the fight, then maybe he could make it kind of a boring fight and use his top pressure and control on Hamasi. Because Korshkov, he's not the best with submissions on the mat. He's a good wrestler.
He just won his last fight by submission.
I understand, but against the top level fighters, it's very different than beating guys over in AMC. So I don't really think Andre Korshkov's the type of guy who's going to go out there and just submit Sabah Hamasi. I could see him maybe winning by ground and pound, but no. I do feel like this fight's primarily going to be contested on the feet. And with Korshkov, I like the kicks. I like the punches. The thing Hamasi is going to really have trouble with is the range of Korshkov, because at long distance, Hamasi's not a big leg kicker. He's really primarily a boxer. So he's going to be lunging into the strikes of Korshkov. Korshkov's a really, really accurate striker. Moving backwards, it might even look kind of like McGregor against Aldo when Aldo lunged in and McGregor just hit him moving backwards. Korshkov does have similar strikes in his repertoire, and Hamasi does lead with his chin kind of like that. So I would not be surprised whatsoever Korshkov was able to end this one via knockout.
Was February when AMC stocks were getting pumped by Reddit? Was that back then?
I think there's still something going on with that.
Different AMC. He wasn't fighting in a movie theater. Can confirm. But Matt, we got a big time fight coming up this weekend. Both of us going with the former champ, Andre Korshkov, to get the win over Sabah Hamasi. But hey, you let us know down below in the comments section who you have in this fight. It's going to be an all action type in the main event. You got Gegard Mousasi, legend, taking on legend to me, John Salter. I can't wait for that fight. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep locked in with Fight Name Picks, we always say. Let's get into it. Big time fight coming up this weekend for the middleweight title. We have, is it the Moose? Is it the Dreamcatcher? Is it any different nickname? We're bridging onto Diego Sanchez territory. But we have Gegard Mousasi taking on John Salter. Matt, one of these men beat Mark Hunt at heavyweight. And it's the champion, the former champion, the current champion. It is Gegard Mousasi. And if you look at Mousasi's 5-on in, he beats Carvalho, which was a crazy win. He wins the belt. He beats Rory McDonald in that. Well, he's the 170 champ, and he's our biggest name. So let's have him fight Gegard Mousasi. And then he loses to Rafael Lovato Jr. And that's where it gets weird, because Lovato Jr. no longer able to compete. Hopefully he can come back at some point, but no longer able to compete. So Mousasi has to go out there and fight Lyoto Machida and beat him by split decision. I thought Lyoto won that fight. But then he fights Douglas Lima. And really, Mousasi looked good in the first three rounds. And then Lima started to come back a little bit. Well, now, because Bellator isn't like the UFC with interim title fights, they have Gegard Mousasi fighting the rightful guy that deserves the shot in John Salter. And John Salter has only lost one time with Bellator. And it was to Rafael Lovato Jr. And that was a crazy back and forth fight where Lovato finally finishes him. But for John Salter, he's like to the nth degree a grappling specialist. And if you look at it in some of his fights after that, he beat Chidi Njokuani, beat Costello Van Steenis, he beats Andrew Capel, a guy that a lot of people were excited about. We were wrong about him in his last fight because he won. We thought he was going to lose, but he won. And then he fights Salter. The craziest fight to me that Salter's had in all of Bellator is when he fought Costello Van Steenis, and you look at the way that he's lunging in for his takedowns to grab Van Steenis, you think, oh, What is easy, Van Steen? This is that guy with Bellator. He's going to be a champ eventually. He grabs his hips. He just tears him down like the waves at the beach. Crashes on him like they do every day. And John Salter kind of had his way in the grappling. So for John Salter, tried and true, he deserves this shot. I'm excited for this fight because sometimes Gegard beats guys like John Salter and sometimes he struggles against them.
I've rolled my eyes because I don't think you've agreed with a split decision ever and you just always go with who lost. It's just the truth, but I had to call you out on it. John Salter, I'm going to say like Doris Burke when she talks about Kevin Durant's jump shot. It's wet. John Salter's jiu-jitsu is wet. It is slick, and it's a joy to watch because John Salter's a really fun fighter. When you look at his, I guess, distribution of submissions, he can get it done in any way. He can attack your leg, body, head, arm, leg, just whatever. John Salter is that kind of a grappler, and you were right. He was one of those guys who he did lunge for a lot of his takedowns, but the great thing about John Salter is that, okay, he started his game with just jiu-jitsu. Then he added MMA takedowns. Then he added the transition into MMA takedowns, and I do really feel like we're seeing a more defensive mind at John Salter, at least throughout this stage of his career. I know, listen, Gegard Mousasi is going to be able to jab him at long distance, because that's what Gegard Mousasi has been able to do throughout his entire career. But I do feel like at least this version of John Salter's not going to be exposed on the feet to the level that we've seen some other guys Gegard Mousasi fought. If Gegard Mousasi is going to win this fight, I really do feel like it's going to be him defending a lot of takedowns, but it's going to be after John Salter tires is when he's going to get that finish on the on the feet. This is my whole point. I think John Salter could fight this fight like Anthony Smith fought John Jones. Anthony Smith fought John Jones not necessarily to win, but not to get finished throughout a lot of that fight. And I do think John Salter's key is the longer this fight goes, the easier it's going to be able to take down Gegard Mousasi. And I know Mousasi got stronger as the fight went on against Lovato Jr., but still, he had been taken down quite a bit in that fight, and Lovato Jr. had controlled him quite a bit on the mat. So I don't have any doubts that if John Salter can get top position on Gegard Mousasi, I think he will have success. I'm not going to say he's going to submit him, but I do think he'll be able to stay on top of him, similar to Jennifer Maia on top of Valentina Shevchenko, for instance. My issue really comes down to the takedowns of John Salter. Gegard Mousasi is really hard to take down. I know it's the weakness of his game if he does have any. Chris Weidman was able to take him down. Lovato Jr. was able to take him down. But I don't think Salter has the wrestling of Lovato Jr. Lovato Jr.'s jiu-jitsu is better than Salter's, and that's why he beat Salter, of course. But the real thing was that Lovato Jr. could take Salter down, and Salter couldn't take Lovato Jr. down. So every time they're starting a grappling sequence, Lovato Jr. is the one in the dominant position. And again, I know Rafael Lovato Jr. Is arguably the best jiu-jitsu practitioner to ever go into MMA, so maybe it wouldn't have mattered no matter what his wrestling was. But again, that was really the key in that fight. So for me, John Salter's not a great striker. You are right. But again, I do feel like defensively, he can at least stay somewhat sound enough so that Gegard Mousasi will be able to get off to a lead early on in this fight. But I honestly don't think we're going to see one of those fights where it's like, wow, John Salter's getting exposed early on. I do think we're going to see a lot of takedown attempts from him, and it might not look pretty. But I think Gegard Mousasi, if he can get past that first two rounds, I don't think Salter's going to have the explosiveness to take down a guy like Gegard Mousasi.
We threw this one out there in the YouTube community tab, so I want to bring this one up. We threw it right out before we taped these one. Only five responses. Mr. Face says, money Mousasi all day, baby. You have an easy win for Geg. You also have Leonardo Maeda Nunes. I had to respond to this one. You upset me because you said Mousasi. Never heard of the other guy. My response, he fought in UFC 11 years ago. He fought Gerald Harrison, lost. Gerald got a raw deal in the UFC. He beat Jason McDonald. He lost to Dan Miller, brother of Jim.
You can forgive someone for not knowing who a guy who fought in the UFC three times 11 years ago.
So here's the run. Here's the crazy thing. So he has those fights. He loses with XFC. He beats Fred Weaver, Jaime Jara, Dustin Jacoby, Brandon Halsey. Now, Jacoby and Halsey with Bellator. Claudio Anichichiro.
He was that one too.
Apologize. Kendall Grove, Jason Radcliffe. He won 7 fights in a row. Lost to Lovato Jr. Now he's won 3 in a row. Capel, who, again, I slept on Capel. He had a fight against Anthony Smith eons ago, but the crazy thing was he beat King Mo and he finished him in the first round. That's what punched his ticket to John Salter, which is crazy. We both had
still King Mo to win. King Mo's not the same guy he used to be.
He beat Chidi and Joe Kiwani. He beats Van Steenis. The Van Steenis wins holds a lot of water with me. Again, man, Salter with some of those takedown attempts. Van Steenis, I thought, would have knocked him out the way that he did it because Van Steenis is such a polished kickboxer, but hey, John Salter, go to the well. He's the main guy at Jim O. You got the Barbarinas of the world. Impa Kasanganai used to be there. Their big guy right now is Joe Selecki. But if you have a look at the odds for this one, Giga Mousasi open to minus 400. He's minus 313. John Salter open to plus 300. He's plus 239. Do we figure that the Tapology votes are close? I don't think they're going to be.
Probably not. Yeah.
688 total votes. 95% Mousasi. 45% by decision. 41% by knockout. Again, Mousasi so crisp pumping that jab out there. How active can he be with his hips? Just like the Rory McDonald-Ray Cooper fight, even though Salter and Cooper aren't the same fighter.
Very different.
But how much can Mousasi deter the takedown attempts so that he can set up his own game? That's my question.
My question is Giga Mousasi... Okay, Giga Mousasi is past his prime. I don't think anybody's going to argue that with me. The guy's had 75 fights. He's definitely not on the front nine of his career. The question is, how much past his prime do you think he is? Because if you think he's still near 100%, John Salter's got nothing for him, and I'm sorry. He is going to get jabbed up at distance. Salter's going to be shooting takedowns from a long ways away, and Giga Mousasi's got a great plumb clinch on the inside, and I don't think John Salter's going to have much for him. I know I was selling some Wolf tickets, but let's just call it what it is. The problem is that Giga Mousasi, after that Lovato Jr. fight, hasn't looked that good. Like, he didn't look good against Lyoto Machida. I thought he beat Machida, but still, it was way too close. It was closer than it should have been. And even his last time out against Douglas Lima, yeah, he looked good early on. He was getting offensive takedowns. But my issue with Giga Mousasi was that he wasn't winning that fight. He was not losing that fight, and there is a difference between it. Everything Giga Mousasi did throughout that fight was to put out the explosiveness of Douglas Lima. It was, I'm holding you against the cage, I'm keeping you on the ground, but it was never him being offensive with any of his techniques. It was solely him being defensive. So I don't know if Giga Mousasi's figured, okay, after him breaking his orbital against your boy there,
Alexander Slamenko.
Thank you. Alexander Slamenko.
Lost that one.
And after the Lovato Jr. fight, I just don't know if he wants to take or have those stand-up wars like he used to. And that's an interesting thing, or it's an interesting, I guess, psychology that he has going into his fights. Because if he's fighting in a defensive way, and if he's fighting not to lose, John Salter's the kind of guy who can take advantage of that. And John Salter's the kind of guy who will take you down when you least expect it, and will choke you out because that's the kind of jiu-jitsu ace he is on the mat. With Mousasi, again, I think he is past his prime, but I still think he's going to be good enough to beat John Salter. I think the takedown defense is still there. I think the striking offense is definitely there. But I do think Mousasi's time as being middleweight champion is going to be over soon. I don't know if Jason Jackson moves up in weight. I don't know who's next in line. But I do feel like we are seeing Giga Mousasi kind of nearing the end of his run. Even look at the Douglas Lima fight. He was noticeably bigger than Douglas Lima. And I'm a guy who's long said that Douglas Lima could probably fight at middleweight. I was kind of proven wrong in that fight. Mousasi was the much bigger guy. When Lima landed on him, though, it hurt him. And that was the thing about Mousasi. He doesn't like getting hit. And I know people bring up Brock Lesnar all the time. Nobody likes getting hit. It's just some guys are kind of trained and they've been seasoned enough to where they don't react to it. Giga Mousasi's not one of those guys. But I keep on coming back to, can John Salter take advantage of that hole in Giga Mousasi's game? Probably not. If John Salter lands a jab on Mousasi, I don't think he's going to react so negatively that then it will open up a takedown or it'll open up a combination for John Salter. I think John Salter will be able to test Giga Mousasi, but I don't think it's going to be enough to beat him.
I mean, you look at the middleweight division, I always thought that Tokov would probably be the guy. Is he in the rankings? Isn't he in the rankings? You got Vander Ford, you got Van Steenis, you got Fabian Edwards, you got Big Johnny coming out of Florida, Johnny Eblen. He's a guy that you really have to watch out for.
Maybe Mousasi's going to be around longer than I thought. I don't think we're seeing Giga Mousasi at the peak of his powers anymore. I really don't. And I do think that the Lovato Jr. fight started to show some of the holes in his game. Because going into that fight, Lovato Jr. is a good wrestler and good at jiu-jitsu. But like Giga Mousasi's been around and he's fought guys like that before and beaten guys like that before. We're starting to see Giga Mousasi think when he fights, I think. And I do think that's the big key. When Giga Mousasi's flowing, you were bringing up all his nicknames before. Giga Mousasi to me is the underground king. Because he's fought all over the place and the UFC never really got the shine.
Dream champ. Strikeforce champ.
Exactly. He's been around and he's done that. And I do feel like we're seeing him. He's not flowing as much as in his fights. It's okay. It's, I think, then I strike. I think, then I wrestle. And I think that once you start doing that, you're starting to slow down. It's kind of like Tyron Woodley in the later stage of his career. The difference is that Mousasi hasn't been able to fight the guys who've been able to take advantage of that yet. And unfortunately, I don't think Salter's going to be that guy, but I do think that person's coming soon.
If Salter wins, it's probably, I could see it being by finish.
Boom.
Again, yeah, by submission, he gets the back. And he out-wrestles Mousasi, and it's early.
It's hard to say that because Lovato Jr. was in some very dominant positions on Mousasi, and even he wasn't able to get the submission. So it is hard to say that Salter would be able to submit a guy like Mousasi when he's been in there with the likes of Jacare in the past. Like, he's been in there with some really, really high-level jiu-jitsu aces.
Mark Hunt of the world. But yeah, I like Mousasi in this fight as well. If John Salter wins, that'd be pretty cool. That'd be great. I mean, hey. One of us. Like, it'd be a great win there, but yeah, both of us going with the Netherlands' own Giga Mousasi to get the win. Let us know down below in the comments section. Do you have the Underground King. Underground King? Out of the heavier
and
weight?
He's younger than John Salter, which is the crazy thing.
Just turned 36, a fresh 36 for Gegard Mousasi. One of the most interesting interviews out there. He's got one with Karen Bryant that just dropped. He talked about the prevalence of leg kicks in MMA. I threw that one out there on Reddit. But for John Salter, again, just a guy that continues to win and is at the highest level. And if you haven't heard of him, it's a pleasure to go back and watch some John Salter films. So please do. But we both got Mousasi in this one. Make sure you check out the PFL playoff preview, okay, as well as the rest for the main card of Bellator 264. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. And check out our second channel, 15-minute card breaks. All sorts of great content over there. Again, keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. As we always say, let's get into it. So all kinds of great fights coming up later on this week. It's weird because both these fight cards are on Friday night. So you got the PFL going against Bellator. Bellator went against the UFC recently. They had a weaker fight night with Sean Strickland, Uriah Hall. Bellator had their biggest fight of all time. AJ McKee, new champion at 145 pounds, newly crowned millionaire. And guess what? The ratings weren't even close to a bad UFC card. So out of that, I ask you the question, the fan. Let us know, do you like the Bellator content? Because we always did Bellator stuff.
Well, this is the question I have for you guys, and Craig, I guess you'll be the one who makes the poll. What's your second favorite organization next to the UFC? Are you a KSW fan? Do you like ONE Championship? Do you like Ryzen? Where do you go when it's not a UFC weekend? Because I know, listen, I can admit this, I normally transition towards when KSW have a big card, I'm always excited for that, and Bellator seems to be a little bit more consistent with their card placements, so it is a lot easier to be a Bellator and KSW fan, I find, on the off-weeks of the UFC. So I'm just kind of curious, what other organizations do you guys like when you're not watching the UFC?
Original Fight Night Picks. I said it to open the show back in 2018. It was these types of cards that I was getting excited for, where, and the KSW ONE Championship, LFA, so on and so forth, where I could pull prospects and then get excited that maybe they end up in the UFC, or maybe they become Bellator champion, or heaven forbid, Dricus du Plessis becomes KSW champ and now he's in the UFC wrecking house. So it's a lot of fun to go about things that way. But where it seems like a lot of people aren't so interested, I want to throw it over. We put out the Instagram poll earlier on today, actually yesterday. 72% of the fans have McDonald to beat Ray Cooper III. Don't know where my New York accent came from. But when I said, will you be watching the PFL playoffs this week? 55% said yes. That's 169 votes yes to 136 that said no. Then I threw out some more PFL stuff. I threw out Korshkov, Hamasi. 78% have Korshkov to beat Hamasi. But then when I said, will you be watching Bellator, 56% said yes, 44% said no. So these are the reasons. I asked this at the end of the show. I just want to know, do you like Bellator? Do you like PFL? If not, what would you like to see? Because we just want to bring content that you want. We've got the interview with Clay Collard. We've got an interview coming out with Jenna Fabian, who's got a big fight coming up against Kayla Harrison. Big time PFL lightweight.
We would talk
stutter.
About Errol Spence versus Manny Pacquiao, but Errol Spence tore his retina, so we can't even get excited about that.
And he didn't even do it in a car accident. Crazy stuff. And Manny Pacquiao, bum shoulder, not bum shoulder. Coolest.
He's playing Nugas now.
Coolest Nike shoes I've ever seen. But yeah, just let us know. Hit us up at Fight Night Picks over on Instagram and Twitter, at Craig Allen FNP, at Matt Allen FNP. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it.